We're having a 9/11 every day. Literally, we're having that many people die every day, and it's going to be getting worse and worse in the months ahead. There's no indication that curve is being flattened. We're spiking, and it's spiking at a rapid rate.
Well, I disagree with Rob in that I think when people take out debts, they have that responsibility. And when you sign your name on that loan document, it is your responsibility to pay back that debt.
A new curfew in effect, waiting for a Democrat still to enter this 2022 U.S. Senate race. And what should be done about student loan forgiveness? We'll get into it on the latest WUNC Politics podcast. I'm Jeff DeBerry. Thanks, as always, for engaging in North Carolina political news. Time again to review some of the happenings across the NC landscape with Rob Schofield from the Progressive NC Policy Watch and Becky Gray from the Conservative John Locke Foundation. We recorded this conversation on Friday morning. Hey there.
Hey, guys. Good to be
back. Hey there.
The pandemic snapshot, not good. A surge of new cases and hospitalizations, with many hospitals moving closer to capacity. Governor Roy Cooper issued a new curfew. It goes into effect tonight at 10. On-site sales of alcohol end at 9. Yep, the state Republican Party held a victory dinner last weekend. It was out in Elkin. Total number of attendees is unclear. Total number of masks worn, very few. Many Republicans have long scoffed at the severity of the virus. Becky, I'm wondering if you have a level of frustration with this gathering and with some of those who appear disproportionately to be on the right, who are taking things still perhaps lightly.
Well, you know, there's frustration across the board, and there seems to be a lot of media focus on Republicans and people on the right. But, you know, we also saw this week where the North Carolina School Superintendents Association had held a meeting. You know, again, these groups that are meeting are saying that they are complying with the regulations and the social distancing and those kind of things that has been laid out. You know, another thing that I think is worrisome is the increase in the cases in the prisons. And so, you know, when you look at, you know, how do you contain these? You know, whether it's in a congregate living setting that the governor has control over, you know, these prison situations, or when you have private citizens, you know, stretching the rules, shall we say. Yeah, it's frustrating. I think, you know, we're looking now like this thing could extend through March of next year, which will mean that we will have been doing this for an entire year. The good news, the light at the end of the tunnel, of course, is that the vaccine looks like, you know, it could be right, literally right around the corner. So, but yeah, it is frustrating, and I think everybody's tired of it.
Rob, we're going to come to you in just a moment. Becky, I just want to, I guess, offer a point of clarification there. The difference between the superintendent's conference and the NCGOP meeting, as I understand it, is that the superintendent's conference, there were masks being worn. They say there was social distancing in effect. I don't know that. I haven't seen images or pictures. We have seen pictures from this dinner in Elkin, and there was no social distancing, and there were very few masks being worn. Right?
Well, I mean, that's what it appears from the picture. The people that have been interviewed and asked by the press have said, no, we complied with the governor's regulations. So, you know, again, I think you're seeing this across the state in many different settings.
Rob, take it away.
Well, these are hard, desperate times we're in the midst of. And if ever there was a moment in which it cries out for all elected officials of all parties to stand up with a unified voice and set an example for the public, this is it. And it's desperately disappointing that the Republican leadership would have flouted the rules so blatantly. I mean, they could say till the cows come home that they were complying, but anybody that looks at the picture sees that they weren't. And I mean, and especially when you're talking about the most important leaders in the state Republican Party, most important elected leaders in our state, by and large, except for perhaps the governor, the fact that they would just, you know, casually, basically ignore basic, simple rules that, frankly, have been in effect for months and months and months, is just a terrible, it sends a terrible message, and it reinforces this negative situation that we've got going.
Rob, there is not expected to be intense or strict implementation or policing of this curfew. I'm wondering if you think there should be, or if there are additional steps you think that the governor or Secretary Cohen or other public health officials need to take at this point, or if I hate to say this, but or if this is something of a runaway train.
Well, this is a very difficult situation, and I'm not a public health expert, but as a layperson observing it from the outside, it certainly seems that the situation is more serious than it's ever been. If ever there was a moment in which we need to do everything in our power to try and limit the spread of the virus, this is it, which presumably is going to include things that most of us would rather not have happen. Lots of restrictions on gatherings of any kind, closing up of restaurants again and gyms and all these facilities that are obviously locales, churches. These are locales in which the virus is clearly being spread. But the problem that the governor walks, of course, is that he has to present policies that are plausibly enforceable. We have to have something that people are going to pay some attention to. And when he's got a lot of opposition from folks on the other side of the political aisle who are not really abetting what he's trying to do, it makes it doubly difficult to convince skeptics, particularly people in the sort of Trump land who continue to deny that this is even a problem. And even as some individuals tragically were dying in hospitals denying that they had the virus, we've got a huge challenge in getting people to wrap their arms around the truth.
Well, I think the curfew is basically unenforceable, and many of the local law enforcement have already said, you know, they're not going to be arresting people. And if someone is out walking their dog at 10:15 in the evening, they have nothing to be concerned about and those kind of things. So I think that these, you know, the curfew and those are really suggestions and recommendations for the governor. And I hope that he is not thinking of putting some sort of police force and policing, you know, with that. I think, though, that, you know, we need to remember, too, that the goal of all of this from the very beginning was to flatten the curve, to ensure that we had the capacity and able to take care of people as they got sick. And so far, we've been able to do that. And although, you know, there is an increase in case and there's pressure on that, you know, we are below that. So I think that's something to remember as well.
But we just need to keep remembering that we're having a 9/11 every day. Literally, we're having that many people die every day, and it's going to be getting worse and worse in the months ahead. There's no indication that that curve is being flattened. We're spiking, and it's spiking at a rapid rate in recent weeks, and it appears headed in an even worse direction in the weeks ahead, especially with the Christmas holidays coming up and additional gatherings taking place. So this is an emergency right now. It's not just something that we kind of, we'll weigh different options. It's a dire emergency, and it calls for very significant action from our leaders.
Attorney General Josh Stein joined 45 attorneys general in filing a major antitrust lawsuit against Facebook this week. The Democrat says Facebook is a prime example of what happens when a company gets too big. The social media behemoth received federal approval to acquire Instagram and WhatsApp back during the Obama administration. This litigation seeks to uncouple those mergers. Trying to centralize this or trying to make this North Carolina specific, is this likely to have any short-term impact on the people of North Carolina from your perspectives? Becky?
Well, one of the big concerns that I see with this is the misuse of people's private information and the privacy violations that may be occurring or are occurring with Facebook and some of these big social media platforms. So again, I think it's interesting that this is not political. This is not a partisan issue at all. I think 48 AGs, in addition to Josh Stein, have joined this lawsuit. So this is clearly a concern across the country, across the board. And in my view, again, it's the privacy issues that stand out in this particular lawsuit.
Well, you know, antitrust laws and their enforcement used to be a really important part of the American political scene and legal scene. And over the last few decades, it's really declined. And that's unfortunate because antitrust suits are about promoting competition. They're actually about promoting free markets and fighting monopolies. And we have allowed these plutocrats, these giant monopolies, to just rage out of control in our country in recent years. You see it in the numbers that we now see in the just astounding, obscene amounts of wealth that are being piled up by the nation's billionaires. $1 trillion going to the nation's top 600 billionaires over the last year, at the same time that, you know, a quarter of Americans don't know where their next meal's coming from. It's an absurd situation, and it cries out for this action. It cries out for many more actions of this kind to break up these giant monopolies that are so dominating our our society right now and are beyond, essentially, they're becoming as big as governments themselves and acting as de facto governments.
Moving on from Stein, let's touch briefly on that 2022 U.S. Senate race, an open U.S. Senate seat. Still, for now, only Republican Mark Walker officially in. We've had some questions about this in recent conversations, though, Rob, I don't know if I've asked you this, so I want to ask you this. I am curious, who is the Democrat who you would most like to see announce first in this race?
I certainly don't have a personal preference. There are a lot of potential strong candidates. The two that we hear the most about are Jeff Jackson, who's a state senator, who's sort of publicly mulling his options, you know, on social media and talking about his children and changing diapers and things like that. And Anita Earls, who is a Supreme Court justice, state Supreme Court justice, who's been a leader in the civil rights movement, a woman of color. There's been a big cry from Democrats in general that they need more statewide leaders of color. And I think Anita would be a very strong candidate if she chose to get in the race.
Becky, I'm not going to ask you which Democrat you want to see jump in. I'm going to ask you which Democrat, briefly, you think is going to jump in first.
Which Democrat I think will come in first? I'd really like to answer the question that you don't want to ask me. But I think, and I've said this before the election.
I don't want to keep you. No, you're fine. What question do I not want to ask you?
Which Democrat do I think will, or that I want to jump into the race?
That was what I asked Rob. I didn't think you'd enthusiastically, full-throatedly endorse a Democrat to jump into the U.S. Senate race. But go ahead.
But I will.
Okay.
Somebody that I have suggested during this election cycle, and as we saw the results of the election cycle, is Jessica Holmes, who is an African-American woman, chairman of the Wake County Commission. She ran and was defeated in the statewide labor commissioner race. But, you know, she is somebody I just think is a rising star in North Carolina politics. And that is somebody that if she is not considering that, I think that her political career is far from over. And if she's not considering a Senate race, it's certainly someone that I think all of us in North Carolina, whether you're Republican or Democrat, just people that monitor and are interested in leadership in North Carolina, Jessica Holmes is somebody to keep an eye on.
Jessica Holmes, former Wake County Commissioner, lost the statewide race for Secretary of Labor this year. And from some of the Democratic strategists I've talked to, they have echoed, or you have echoed what they've said, Becky, and that is that she has a bright political future, and she was on the ballot in a not great year for Democrats. So we'll leave 2022.
Well, can I say one more thing about 2022, which is on the Republican side? I think it's just a remarkably, and I think troubling commentary that Lara Trump seems to be, you know, running ahead in some polls. Here's a person who basically has the most tenuous connections to North Carolina, and it's all about the Trump name, and it bespeaks sort of the weird state of the Republican Party, that they've got a lot of elected officials who've served significant terms and, you know, been around for a while and accomplished things, and that someone with so few accomplishments would be leading in their polling is a little troubling.
Let me just follow up on that. One thing that I think is not surprising is that North Carolina is now the ninth largest state in the union, a purple state. Clearly, in my view, somebody that watches politics, I think it's probably the most interesting state in the union. But I don't think it's a surprise that some of these more nationally known, nationally centered figures may look at North Carolina as someplace to come. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if there was a Democrat candidate, perhaps, who came from the outside. But I think it's something that we maybe need to get used to here in North Carolina, that we're getting a lot of attention. We're a fun place. We're a wonderful state. We're a fun place to play politically. And we may be getting more of this kind of national attention, not just with money and interest, but also with candidates coming in.
This will be the first open U.S. Senate seat in North Carolina in 18 years. Last time it happened was in 2004 when John Edwards, the incumbent, of course, did not run for re-election because he was on the ticket with the Democratic nominee John Kerry. Final topic, with a little more than a month until President-elect Joe Biden is sworn into office, the calls for him to cancel student debt on day one of his administration are growing. Elizabeth Warren and Chuck Schumer are among those leading the effort for $50,000 of loan debt to be wiped out. Biden has signaled interest in a more moderate forgiveness amount, possibly $10,000. Critics are concerned that this would disproportionately help the upper middle class, not actually provide an economic boon, and potentially set a dangerous precedent. Rob, what amount, if any, should be forgiven?
You know, I don't know. I don't have a specific number for you, but I can tell you that there's no doubt that the crushing amount of student debt that we have right now is an enormous issue. It's something like $1.6 trillion. We've got